Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
To Melissa Michelson, she's a professor of political science at Menlo College, and she's with us from Atherton, California. Melissa, welcome. It's good to have you on the phone.
Thanks for having me.
So you heard our first caller there say, hey, I voted in 2012, and then basically I disengaged from the political process because I felt, you know, nothing had really changed, and I got rather cynical about the process. If you talk to a number of young voters, you know, who are having this experience of engagement and voting for the first time, will you often find a drop-off in the years that follow a first vote?
It depends what happens after that first vote. It's especially discouraging for first-time voters if they vote and they either end up not voting for the winner, so they don't feel like their vote mattered because the other person won, or they can be discouraged because they vote and then, as Andrew was saying, they didn't really see any change. So they thought they were voting for something, and then it was like the politicians on the other end didn't hold up their end of the bargain. On the other hand, if you vote and you're part of a big change election, you vote and you see that something really happened, then you're encouraged and you feel empowered. So I don't think you can generalize. It depends.
Call here from Abby in Fergus Falls. Hi, Abby. You're 22. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
How are you thinking about this midterm and what it means to be a voter your age to vote?
I mean, for me, I was always kind of afraid of politics. It usually was a cause of a lot of fights within my family. I saw it as kind of a confrontational thing. But then I decided to become a teacher, and I realized that I had to advocate for my students who have a lot of opinions and ideas, and, you know, politics affects what happens in their classroom, but they don't have a say in it. And so once I decided to be a teacher, I became really active within politics, and, you know, that's why I'm really excited to vote in this midterm, to kind of allow my students' voice to be heard through the polls, so that they can get the resources they need and get what they need, both inside and outside of the classroom.
Abby, I think that's really inspiring. I also think it's interesting that it was such a point of contention in your home, right, within your family, that it kind of turned you off. I mean, that could have gone either way. You could have seen what parents and family members who were so engaged that you thought you had to be part of that, but instead it was, I don't need this in my life. Yes?
Correct. I'm not a very confrontational person, so that was a big turnoff for me when it came to politics, you know, all the fights that came out of it. But yeah, you know, I'm happy to fight now for my students, and they give me that inspiration. Yeah.
I'm really glad to have the call. Thanks so much, and thanks for tuning in. If you've just tuned into the discussion, we're going to talk about young voters. There's a lot of predictions again this year that they have the potential to turn out in unprecedented numbers. There's a lot of young voters who don't register and don't vote. Is this year going to be different? I want to hear from younger listeners and younger voters, 18 to 30, who are first or second time voters, and some young voters who simply are not inspired to vote. What gets you to the polls? What keeps you away? 651-227-6000. 800-242-2828 on Twitter at Kerry, KERRI NPR. We'll go to news. We'll be right back to the conversation. Okay, continuing our conversation now on young voters with Melissa Michelson from Menlo College. And joining us now, Kay Kawashima Ginsburg. She's the director of the Center of Information and Research on Civic Learning and Engagement at Tufts. Wow, Kay, that's a mouthful. Welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you so much. Good morning.
How are you? I think you heard Melissa and I talking a bit about what the experience of a first vote is like for a younger voter who then does not see the change happen that they thought the vote would make. I'm interested in what happened, what we know research-wise, what happens with those voters. I mean, does a first vote mean you are then likely to continue voting, or is this experience different?
You know, I think what Melissa said has a lot of truth to that. You know, it's true that young people don't often see what's exactly changing once they cast their votes. And that's often the reason why the midterm turnout is far lower than presidential elections. So that's another reason. So they could vote in 2012. But the voters that voted that election was really latching onto the idea that president would change something that's directly relevant to their daily living. That's often not true, at least immediately. That's oftentimes the work of the Congress at the state and local level that actually makes a difference. And so I can see that discouragement. This year, though, we're definitely seeing a very different trend in that sense. We are seeing as many young people saying, this election, I think, will have an impact on my daily living, on the things that actually interact with me directly, just as much as young people are saying in 2014, when that sort of sense is much higher or much more common. So that's related to how young people think they're more likely to vote this year than they were in 2014. So yeah, there could be that sense, but young people are definitely seeing a reason to engage this year.
You know, Kay, I always find that interesting, too, because we know that voting for a state legislator or voting for a governor is probably going to have more, or a mayor is going to have more impact on your day-to-day life if that's what younger voters are looking for. And yet, the numbers are pretty anemic when you look at young voters turning out in those races as well. Why? What? Where's the disconnect?
You know, that's absolutely true. There's so much fewer people voting for a mayoral race, and especially among young people, there's almost nobody voting for a lot of mayoral race. And that's often a problem. And one of the reasons why people say that might be is because for especially young voters who may have moved to a new community and just getting to know the local community, they don't quite get a sense of who is running the government in the city, what the system we have in that city, and who's in the state legislature. So they may not feel like they have enough information and knowledge to be able to vote. And with some of the erosion in local media industry, it's becoming actually harder and harder to get really specific and relevant local coverage about some of these people that will actually impact young people's lives.
Yeah, that's a really good point. For as much as we cover politics, and I think we cover those races, you're right. There's so much focus on Washington and not enough, right, on what's happening in our own communities and states.
That's right.
Let me grab a call here from Thomas in Grand Forks. Hi, Thomas. How do you approach this question? Good to have you on the line.
Yeah, thank you. So I'm 24 years old, and this is the first time I'm going to be voting in a midterm. I've voted for the past two presidential elections, but honestly, this is the first time I've known the state legislator, the state senator, the city councilwoman, and the senator for the United States Senate that I'm going to be voting for. And part of that is just due to the activism that I've seen amongst my generation. Groups like Vote Together have been really active in my community, and I've been, it's been a pleasure and an honor now to actually get to vote in a midterm.
So, Thomas, do you, now that you're involved in some of these activist groups, do you see the influence of that kind of activism or just get out the vote programs actually inspiring some of your peers to vote? I guess I'm curious about whether you're seeing some of your friends and peers getting swept up in this, as you have.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially in North Dakota, where the current state legislator has made it recently harder for students to cast a ballot and younger people. I've actually seen more of my friends who weren't going to vote before this kind of be peeved that they were being silenced and are now going to go vote. And that's really exciting to see.
Really good to have your call. Melissa, so that brings me to one of the questions I wanted to talk about, which is often I think younger voters do not feel like the politicians are speaking to them. And this is a chicken and egg thing. Politicians don't have to speak to them because younger voters don't flex their power. And younger voters often feel like the politicians aren't speaking to them because they don't flex their power. How do we break
that? It's a reinforcing cycle.
Right.
So I think we are going to see some break to that. And I think more young people are seeing the connection. So either it's that they're getting mobilized by an organization in their community, like The Last Caller, or maybe they've had some, there's been some visibility in their community with the local form of government, which is usually law enforcement, but for some other reason that they are going to vote, and then hopefully we'll break that cycle. But it's a logical conclusion. Why vote if you don't think it matters, if all they ever talk about is stuff that, you know, old people care about? And if you're an elected official or a candidate, why would you spend time and resources on a community that isn't going to help you win?
By the way, Melissa, I noticed that there is almost no conversation about student loans. And I think that that has fallen off the agenda, at least in the political realm. I think it's fallen off the agenda because younger voters are not forcing it back onto the agenda. You have to make it hard for politicians to ignore an issue like that that affects so many people. What's your take on that?
I think that's correct, but I also think that it's not the top issue for a lot of young people. What I see among my students is that they're concerned about issues of social justice and police brutality and gun violence. And yeah, they're worried about student loans. They're worried about the debt that they're taking on, but they're also worried about these broader issues. And so I think to a certain extent, they don't want to just be told all the time about student loans and how they're going to get jobs. They care about their broader communities. Then I think it's also important to remember that only about a quarter of students are in college. Most young people are not in college. So student loans really isn't their issue either.
Let me take a call here from Jordan in Minneapolis. Hey, Jordan. Hi.
Hello. How are you?
Hi. Do you vote or not?
Well, I am 27 years old, and I have yet to vote for three reasons. One, I never grew up in a home where politics and voting, you know, was frequently discussed. So that was kind of like, as I learned about that, was like in high school. But did I really pay attention? I'm afraid no. Mm-hmm. However, as I've grown up, I do realize the importance of voting. But the only thing that really gets me is, now that we are going to vote, the younger population, it's going to be an injustice to the voting, for one, because I think that now that we go to the polls, we are going to vote Democrats across the board, regardless of however we feel about a certain issue.
Well, why do you say that?
Well, okay, personally, let's say that I'm a Democrat, and if I don't agree with a Democrat issue or a bill, then I will vote for Republican on that side. And that's how I think voting should be. But since we're going to have a more population of younger people, we're going to see a man who's a president now get away as we do, and we're going to say, well, we got to get this guy out, so I'm just going to vote these across the board.
Okay, but Jordan, here's the thing. Did you hear what we were saying about voting for state legislators and mayors and county commissioners? That's how you really have an impact, I think, on some of those specific issues that you're kind of frustrated you can't wield influence on. Does that make sense?
No, yes, I completely agree. And I will say this, I will vote. It's taken me some time to really understand, you know, why we vote. And the reason I think it's really hard for me is that when you say I don't vote or you haven't voted yet, regardless of age, you get this side eye from your peers as, you know, and you walk around with a sticker that says I voted. And if you don't have one, it's like, oh, are you not proud of your country? You know,
so it's like, peer pressure. It's a good thing. It's good peer pressure, Jordan. Hey, you said something that I don't want to miss here. And I want to talk to Kay and Melissa about this. Jordan mentioned, Kay, that he didn't cover this in civics in high school. I know you're a big proponent of this. And is there really a connection between fewer younger voters in America and what, the elimination or the diminishment of civics education?
Yeah, I would say so. And it really shows in races that are not presidential elections. So the local races and off-year elections, so to say, are where kind of the turnout has been declining over time for young people. And that's really because of the way in which civics are taught, which could be just scratching the surface of what we should know as people that are participating in civic life. So they have really concrete and rote knowledge about government and systems, but maybe not deep value set that would really want them to motivate to participate and talk to their peers, or the skills to really find information that's accurate or participate in debate that might be about really important issues. Those are the things that the great civic education can do when done right. But when you do that as kind of, well, we're just going to cover a little bit of civics, maybe in another class, maybe U.S. history, maybe we'll do half semester, then students don't get the in-depth knowledge and skills they need in order to fully participate. I also want to say that what the last caller said that was really important, which is really about the family and how they can be such a great source of both experience as people that are active in the community, but also the conversation they can have starting in young age with kids about things that really matter for their community and for the country.
Melissa, I was going to bring that up with you, is there was not a a family culture, right, of maybe talking about political issues and voting. What do we find about the connection, even in taking your kids along to vote? How much does that matter?
It matters a lot. If you are politicized by your family or your peers, you are much more likely to participate. And of course, it can go too far. We heard earlier from a voter who had shied away from politics because she found it so divisive. But definitely the research shows that the more that your parents talk about politics and help you understand it and basically socialize you into being interested in politics and voting, if they take you along to vote, if they go through the ballot with you, if they talk to you about it, then you are much more likely to vote. And part of that is because of this cognitive barrier that voting poses. The media and interest really does tend to focus on presidential races, but right, as you get down into those lower races, it's harder and harder. And so, you know, the more that your schooling or your parents can help you decipher the choices in those lower ballot races, the more likely you are to participate.
Manny called from Minneapolis, says he's a millennial minority, wants to hold the system accountable, so he voted early as a way to check his work. Shannon called from Monticello to say her daughter's school is having a pep fest that will bus the kids to the polls. Wow, that's great. Matt says, 33-year-old, does that count as young? I voted in both the primary and the general Minnesota elections as absentee. Now that our state has no excuse absentee voting, it's significantly easier to vote and seems to be a no-brainer for those with busy lives. Kay, do you know whether there's a connection between dropping barriers to voting? And I mean that in a lot of different ways, including the no excuses early voting that we have here in Minnesota, and turning out younger people, and oppositionally, when you've got states like Georgia that are putting up barriers to voting, do you find that younger voters stay away too?
Yeah, and sometimes these barriers that are set up are not known to voters and vice versa. So Minnesota actually has a really great system of allowing same-day registration, online voter registration, now non-excuse absentee. So there are ways in which the government can set up a system to make sure that the barriers are low while keeping the election secure. But the office has to also communicate with young people that these things are available. So I'm really glad that the last caller knew about that. But a lot of times when we do research about, for example, online voter registration, which is really convenient, we find that young people don't use it as much as you would think they do. Same with receiving text messages about reminders to vote. Those are part of the challenge of making sure there's, you know, great mechanism to make voting easy, but then you have to go one more step to make sure, you know, you either communicate that through social media, you blast it out on public television, just use any means necessary to make sure the young people are actually aware of that and know how to use it.
You know,
every rule has to be explained.
I was chuckling with what Jordan said about getting the side eye if you're not wearing that little I voted sticker on election day. And I was thinking about all the different ways that social media is trying to activate young voters. There is this comedian Billy Eichner. He was on Jimmy Kimmel's show recently, and he's launching this tour for a millennial voter education. Listen to how he describes this.
We're going to go to, imagine leaving L.A., horrifying.
Oh, my God.
But we're going to go to specific districts, as many as we can afford to, all around the country. We're going to be educating people there, particularly young people who maybe never voted in the midterms before, when election day is, how to register to vote, who the candidates are, because it's not like the presidential election where we're all focused on the same race.
Uh-huh.
There are different races everywhere. It's complicated. There's a lot of information to process, and we're going to go try to make it fun, and we're going to turn the midterms into the hottest, sexiest event of the entire year.
Melissa, I like that, the sound of that, because it's taking away embarrassment, right? Of, well, how do you do this? I've never done it before. It's easier just to stay away. He's taking that on head on. I wonder if that kind of stuff works. What do you think?
Well, I think it definitely matters that celebrities are talking more and more about voting. And of course, young people are very concerned with how they appear to the world and very concerned about embarrassing themselves. And that has a lot to do with how they behave. But I want to follow up on another thing, which is that no-fault absentee voting allows people to Google the races.
Ah,
and that
exactly.
really helps with these lower ballot races because, yes, everyone's focused on the presidential. So first you've got everyone's like telling you to vote. You're like, you got to vote. You're like, well, shit, I don't know. You know, I don't know about these candidates. I don't know about these races. But if you vote absentee, you can take the ballot home. You can Google everything. And then you can feel like you know what you're doing. And so that really is helpful for young people and for all voters to be able to go search up information like that.
Melissa Michelson with us, if you've just gotten in on the conversation, professor of political science at Menlo College, and Kay Kawashima Ginsburg, director of the Center of Information and Research on Civic Learning at Tufts in Boston. And hearing from you this morning, younger listeners, younger voters or non-voters, I've just 18 to 30 years old, who are first or second time voters, and younger listeners who simply do not feel that your vote matters. You've sat this out. Is this the year that changes? Talk to me a little bit about why you have not voted before. What happens when you get these messages that are urging you to vote? Have you voted in maybe a presidential election, maybe a mayoral race? Talk to me about your level of engagement and how you see the political system as a younger voter, as somebody who's somewhat new to this. 800-242-2828, wherever you are in our five-state area, 651-227-6000, and on Twitter at CarrieNPR, where Andrea says, I was thrilled to have my 22-year-old niece text me a few weeks ago about this year's election. I'm 36. I voted in every election. Joshua says, I'm 29. I don't buy the notion that because some votes fall flat that we shouldn't vote at all. It may be true that some votes do not lead to change, but throughout our democracy, votes have been the cause of the political change that has been made. Kay, I wanted to read something that I read a Harvard sophomore wrote in her school newspaper. It's Michelle, and she writes this. Voting may feel mundane, but that voting can feel mundane is the real privilege. People had to fight for this right hundreds of years ago. Women had to fight just 100 years ago. It's short-sighted and selfish of us not to vote. You think that's the kind of appeal that maybe reaches some of these, I think, younger people are going to call in and tell us why they don't vote?
You know, that's, of course, a really great argument, and I completely agree, but I don't think it appeals to all the young people. I think we have a lot of young people who have a really busy life. It's really, you know, they have three jobs that they're trying to juggle and have a kids, and they might have other things that are going on in their life that's just as difficult. So having voting as a mundane issue is a privilege, but also there are people that really need concrete reason that they feel like they need to vote for. And we shouldn't really make moral judgments about how and why people vote as
why?
Long as they vote.
Oh, feel. Okay, as long as they vote. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can we make a moral judgment if you don't vote? Is that allowed? What do you think?
So, you know, I think it seems like peer-to-peer moral judgments already happening, according to one of the callers.
That's
and
right.
I would say that's a shift in how young people see each other, talk about politics, and then call out a person that's not voting.
Really?
Say you're being irresponsible. You know, when we have been around for almost 20 years, and we've been watching the millennial generation engage and now Generation Z, and it was at least more common to see young people say, you know, I'd rather do something direct in the community that has a direct impact. I'm working really hard. There's no reason to vote. And if you look at how little or how few young people voted in 2014, it was 1 in 5 or less. Then you can see how is it possible to give a side eye, right? It was so uncommon to have somebody voting in midterm. And now that peer culture has shifted from that of let's not vote on anything that we don't understand or don't think have an impact to we need to really band together to make a positive impact as a generation, and voting is a way to do that. That belief is much stronger, and it's definitely driving the votes this year.
You know, Melissa, I know that some in Silicon Valley are getting involved in this. I was reading about Snapchat's outreach on this, which is really impressive. In 2 weeks, they guided around 4,000 Snapchat users to register to vote. They were directing users to turbovote.org. It's this nonpartisan voter registration site. Why don't more social media companies get involved in this? There's got to be innovation that they could lead.
Actually, I'm seeing a lot of it. There is, for many years, there's been activity by Facebook trying to get out the vote. There's activity by Twitter. There's activity by Lyft and Uber. So actually what I'm seeing here in Silicon Valley is that a lot of companies here, a lot of tech companies are seeing that encouraging voter turnout is something that gives them good media coverage and is a way for them to have an impact in the communities. So I actually think they are doing it. It's not just Snapchat.
So,
it's pretty widespread.
Okay, but you see that they're advocating. I really like how Snapchat is created a platform that says it's this easy. You press this button, you go right to turbovote.org, and you're registered to vote. That's actually kind of what I meant on the innovation side of this.
Right. And there are a lot of Silicon Valley companies that reach out to me actually pretty regularly saying, how can we use technology to do this? And it's something that a lot of companies are interested in. So it's great that Snapchat did that and got a lot of publicity about it, because I think that further encourages other tech companies to follow suit.
Mike called in from White Bear Township. He says, I'm new here. I just moved from Alaska. I feel like I don't know enough about the local issues to vote. I'm planning to vote, but I feel like I don't have enough information. I'm 33. So, Mike, you are perfect for early no excuses voting, which, as we said, you can sit there with the app. Basically, it's the absentee ballot, and you can Google all the questions or, you know, the races and see what's come up. I mean, that's the beauty of that kind of voting from your own home, where you can get lots of information and you don't feel this pressure in the moment on election day. So I hope you're still listening. Maura says, as a retired civics teacher, I agree that we failed to bring students into voting. Civics education seems to have fallen short on all counts. I really feel this is a central issue for our country. Kay, we talked about this in a minute. Is that really about funding? What has caused the diminishing amount of civics education that's going on?
I think it's a combination of deprioritization of civics in light of other standardized tested subjects, especially in urban and low-income communities where they felt like they needed to meet some benchmarks in literacy and math in order to survive. So that's one. Research shows with more time spent on those subjects, less time on civics. But the other side of that is that talking about issues that are really meaty and interest students about, say, politics or social issues have been more difficult to discuss in the classroom because we have become more politically polarized in the classroom, so in the society. So when the teacher, in response often to the students' request to talk about things that are going on in our politics, they have to hesitate and think about how to make sure that sounds nonpartisan all the time. if they don't do that well, then somebody will call the school to say, you know, so-and-so try to really turn my kid around
wow.
to one way or the other.
Yeah.
It's a really difficult conditions for teachers, so we need to really support them, give them training, and in some cases set up policies that can really support that kind of strong teaching.
We have a caller, I think, who's going to speak to that, to Jana in Annandale. Hi, Jana.
Hi. I have two daughters who have gone through American Civics classes. And one is in it right now. So the teacher gave out sample ballots.
Uh-huh.
And so we've gone through it, and I was so excited because they go with me every time to vote.
Good.
Unfortunately, then in the middle of class, they do these news snippets. There was the Kavanaugh hearings going on. We're a very conservative district, and my daughter's on the other side. And there these boys were in class, were yelling, liar, liar, she's lying. And my poor daughter is just melting on the inside while they're turning it around, and nothing was done to stop it.
Yeah.
So civics is not a panacea.
Yeah.
To getting people out there. It is the parent involvement, and it is education, and it's all of it together. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, this is a really good point, Janet. Melissa, let's advance that idea that the polarization has seeped into the schools, even to, you know, middle school and high school classrooms. What does that mean?
Well, I think it means that it's much harder for teachers to decide to talk about civics, because you definitely don't want students in your classroom to feel silenced or attacked or uncomfortable. And as has already been mentioned, you don't want complaints coming from the parents that you are biased. And so it's easier to just avoid it or talk about things that aren't about politics, because you run the risk, if you talk about politics, if you talk about current events, of having these uncomfortable issues in the classroom where students end up feeling silenced or attacked, or sometimes even that it spills out into violence outside of the classroom between the students. And so I think a lot of teachers just opt to not get into that area.
Yeah. Omar called to say at 22, voting because he didn't vote in 2016 and he saw what happened. He believes his vote can make a difference. On Twitter, a listener says, thanks for the conversation. You nudged me to find a polling place near me that's open on Saturday, which will make voting much easier for both me and my husband. Way to go. Here's Ivan, who says, I'm 32. I voted in 08, 12, and 14, caucused and voted in 16. Ivan, you are unusually involved. Early primaried, voted for 18. Local voting is the hardest, as candidates below the state level often don't have websites or Facebook pages or anything, and those that do often don't talk about the issues. To the phones, to Abil in Prior Lake. Abil, I'm sorry. I mispronounced that. Good to have you on the line.
It's okay. Hello, everybody. Actually, I'm embarrassed talking about this. This will be my first year voting.
I'm glad you called.
And the reason why I'm voting, me and my bunch of my friends here, is because we're just tired of the division in the country. People are very angry. You hear the Parkland shooting. You hear the Senegal shooting up in Pittsburgh. And it's like we have a commander-in-chief who is lying, and who's making lying to be okay, and we're raising our kids to... We teach them lying is bad and always tell the truth. And it's like we got to have somebody who's in charge to be like a role model. Actually, I consider myself a moderate conservative, and I can't see myself actually voting that way, because I feel like they don't stand up and kind of, when somebody does preach hate or does say something that is inappropriate towards women, that they don't stand up and say, hey, that's not okay. And I feel like if I don't vote this year, like, I'd be saying, hey, I don't care. And that's not the right message that I want to send to my two-year-old right now.
So having a child also nudged you towards voting for the first time at 26. Your mom?
Also my mom, because my mom last year blamed me that the reason why somebody lost was because of me. I didn't vote. I was like, Mom, I'm just one person. But I just feel like guilty, because I just feel like I live in a district, I think, We have a tight congressional race right going on in our district right now, and I didn't vote since I was eligible to vote, and I feel like this year I have to vote, because if I don't, I don't think I'll live with myself, honestly.
All right.
I just wanted to say that.
I'm really glad you called. Thanks very much, because now you're coming clean and you're feeling good about all the choices you're making there to talk about it and to get out and vote. Kay, here's Bobby who says, even if your candidate doesn't win, your vote has sent a message. For this reason, we're foolish as a whole population to only vote for the Democrat or Republican that we think will win. We should vote for the person who will represent our needs best. I think that comes back to this idea of, well, I tried voting and it wasn't the result that I hoped it would be. I like what she's saying about you're also flexing your power, right, as a group of younger voters who cannot be ignored. And that message gets to the state capitol or to Washington, right? These politicians sit up and take notice of that, I hope.
That's exactly right. So even if the district people live in are not competitive or you don't think your particular vote counts, like you are one person, but as a population, young people are often overlooked. And that's how sometimes political campaigns see young people. They don't vote, so we're not going to talk to them. We don't really have to put anything that's relevant for young people on our platform. But if as a generation, if you band together and vote and show anybody that's running a campaign or running for office that young people are to be feared if they don't care about them, if they don't listen to them, that's a message to send. And I do think young people realize that this year.
And Melissa, do you hear that from your students?
Well, my students are kind of different because, you know, we're here in Silicon Valley and I'm talking to them about politics quite a lot, right? So they've signed up to take political science. So they're a pretty politically active. But I do think there's a mismatch here, right? Because as Kay is saying, if young people vote, then they have a voice, then politicians fear them. But I think at the individual level, there's definitely still this psychological reaction of, well, I voted and nothing happened, or I voted and it didn't matter, and so why would I vote again? But there's also this other psychological mechanism that can go on that the last caller referred to, which is what we political scientists call minimax regret, that you vote because at least even if you lose, even if your candidate loses, at least you know you tried and you don't regret not voting, right? So that last caller has a little bit of regret or at least some guilt that's been imposed by his mom that he didn't vote. So I think for some people, they're going to vote this year because then at least they'll know that they tried and they won't have that regret if it turns out badly.
You know, I think we've heard from a number of callers today that really reinforce this idea that peer pressure works. Family pressure really works, which, you know, given the way we use social media, I think is more, these tools are at our fingertips in a way that, you know, that they weren't 20 years ago. It's great that we can use that, but even within your family to say, okay, you know, make this a kind of a family commitment and then make sure that you spread that influence in your area of influence through social media. That really gives me hope, I have to say.
And it really does work. If your family and your peers are telling you to vote, that matters a lot more than
it does.
Ads on TV or stuff that comes in the mail. Absolutely.
It does. Melissa, you were going to add?
Sorry, that was me, Melissa, saying that.
That's okay. You know, I think there's a lot to that. Sort of just having some bigger purpose or community that people feel like they can belong to. They're voting as part of a movement, or they're voting because that's the family value, or in things like Vote Together, it's a community value. As a neighborhood, we're going to vote, and we're going to celebrate the act of voting. These things all matter, and it's so right. It's much better than hearing that from political elites, in a way, than the people that you trust, your everyday people, neighbors and friends and family.
Have you two both voted early voting in California, Melissa?
I have. I mailed my ballot a week ago.
Way to go. Kay, how about you in Massachusetts?
I actually like going to the polling place.
I do, too. I like that feeling on election day of being part of something bigger. Hey, thank you both. Really good to have you here. Thanks for all the great calls from young listeners. And I'm buoyed by the idea that you're engaged and you're committed to getting out this year.
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet Kerri at KERRINPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.